Sorry, Chair, do you want me to talk to our suggestions?
You may.
Thank you, Chair. First of all, Chair, I just want to raise my concern and just for the way forward, because I'm sure we'll have future electoral amendment bills prior to 2014 coming before us. When we raised concerns about some of the issues, and none of them are that substantial, but we did raise some concerns, the response was that the bill had been discussed with the National Party Liaison Committee. And so therefore it was not acceptable for a political party now at this stage to be bringing up concerns. I did take this back to our national spokespersons who serve on that committee. They told me that the draft, the ideas that were going to go into the bill were indeed brought to the NPLC. They had made submissions in writing. Nothing subsequently was brought to the NPLC for discussion. So I think we must be very careful of what consultation means, what level it was at, because I fully understand that that is party political, and then for us to come, you know, after the fact, it doesn't make a lot of sense. But Chair, we did take, certainly did take on board the majority of the comments that were made, went back and looked at our submissions, and withdrew most of our comments. I think it's the only one is the that still stands now is the change to Section 39 in the Municipal Electoral Act, which refers to the number of party agents per voting station. And perhaps, Chair, I presume we're going to go through clause by clause, or if that could just be fully explained and we could be sure exactly what it means, because our concern was at the time that if you, for instance, have a school that you're using as a voting station and you're using three classrooms, it appeared that you could have six party agents, two for each of those classrooms. But the bill wasn't making it clear that there could never be more than two in any of the classrooms at one time. It appears, though, that what the drafters of the bill intended was not that. Was, in fact, the total number at the voting station could be two or more at the discretion of the Electoral Commission. So if that can just be clarified, then we don't have a problem at all. Thank you, Chair.
I thank you for recapping on the issue. Just to say that with regard to political parties discussing at this national political party liaison committee level, it's always important that the respective parties do adequately report back and interact with members of parliament, because although it is very important for political parties to meet at that level to discuss the issues at that level and process issues, as it were, for want of a better word, but that process in itself cannot substitute the responsibility of Parliament looking at the issues and applying its mind to the relevant issues. So even if the work that the parties had done at that national level was 100%, it would still not absolve Parliament from applying its mind to whatever they decided there. There are a number of pieces of legislation which have been returned where the courts have said that Parliament had not given it the requisite attention. So I'm merely saying that that process is laudable, it's good and fine, but it does not absolve us from our responsibility. We still have to apply our mind as Parliament. Having said that, the issue that remains is the issue pertaining to the number of party agents. So there was a suggestion, there was discussion on that particular point, and could we have the response from the department? Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, members. Thank you also for the response with regard to the role of the national PLC. I don't think it was ever the intention of the IEC to indicate that there cannot be any further discussion or impinge on the role of the committee or of Parliament as a whole. Thank you, Chair. With regard to the suggested amendment, the Commission's view is that we feel that it may just unnecessarily complicate the particular provision by adding another provision. You started by saying two and then you add another but may not exceed a maximum of two. The situation is, Chair, that we can never foresee exactly the circumstance of these particular voting centres and the shape and size in which it will take. Yes, we've made an example of a school being used, but you may also have a situation where you use tents or whatever facility may actually be available. And we just thought if you were to add another qualification with regard to the maximum of two, it may just unnecessarily complicate the particular matter. That is simply our view on the issue, sir.
Thank you, Chair. Yes. May I just clarify the suggested amendment? It reads two or more agents per voting station, as may be indicated by the Commission. That's fine. Then it says, if voting at the voting station takes place in more than one room or separately enclosed area. Now, if voting does not take place in more than one room or separately enclosed area, in other words, if it takes place in a single room, not more than one room, if it takes place in a single room, then this clause doesn't cover it at all, the way that I read it. We don't make allowance for the number of agents if we've only got a single room.
A response from the department, if you are ready, or if you are still discussing the issue and looking at the various aspects, I'll give you 3 more minutes. Is that sufficient?
We are actually puzzling about the interpretation of this clause at the moment. If we can have a minute or two, it'll help us. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you. is added. How long do you think the budget thing is going to be? Review and recommendation?
I missed last June, but I started this.
Jefferson, we've just been advised by the law advisors who knows these things and knows of statutes, and they say to us.
I'll give you the. Wait. Be patient. Patience is a virtue. He was just saying to me that they've consulted among themselves. Now they are ready to brief the committee. Nothing wrong with this preamble. The floor is yours, sir.
Thank you, Jefferson. We've now consulted with the law advisors who knows about these things. They know everything about it, and they interpret the clause as it stands at the moment to say what we want it to say. They say in a normal voting station, 2 at the most. If voting takes place in more than one area, then it can be more than 2, so that the agents can cover the areas, the additional areas that exist. And that is actually what we wanted. That is what they tell us it's saying at the moment. So we would stand by our law advisors' interpretation of what it's saying, because that is what we wanted it to say. And in other words, sir, in a normal voting station, there cannot be more than 2.
I give you the opportunity, Honorable Clock. Let me start with, is your mic on? Thank you. Thank you. Are you Honorable Lovemore?
Thank you, Chair. With all due respect, I simply cannot understand how the law advisors can be happy. My colleague is absolutely correct. We did want this to be clearer, saying that there could be no more than two at any one in any one area at a voting station. That was our submission in writing. If it's felt that would be too complicated, I don't see that either. But it's not a big deal, Chair. So we can leave that. But the fact is that this, the way that it is written, does not cover the instance where you have a single venue, where you have a single room. It only covers the instance where you have more than one room or voting in a place and a separately enclosed area. But if you have it in a single room, then there's nothing to tell you how nothing in the Electoral Act at all to tell you how many party agents you can have. This doesn't cover it.
Chairperson, I'm sorry, we've again spoken to our law advisors and we don't have an objection to it being changed as it's proposed, because it will take up to two for every single room, where the original intention was that it should only be one. But we're quite happy to accept that, because it's still in the discretion of the Commission.
Honourable Clock.
Yeah, Chair, I thank you very much for the opportunity. I'm not very sure we are talking about the same country, South Africa, as we know it. Because I can assure you, I can take you out right now as we speak. There are areas like, for instance, if you go to Lulu Mountain, very big villages on top of the mountain. There are no schools, nothing, no infrastructure. Obviously, under those concrete conditions, we want to use a tent. And we can imagine in terms of security of the ballots and everything, we are going to need even more than six voting agents to secure the space. So I'm not very sure whether we are talking about Cape Town as a city, or we are talking about Johannesburg as a city. We are talking about South Africa in totality as a country with different peculiarities as we move in the periphery. So I'm not very sure really what I mean, because the argument to me doesn't hold water. Because there are areas which do not have infrastructure at all. So you'd want to need the security which is intact to secure the station.
Thank you, Comrade Clock. Members, what we require, you see, also with the input of the state law advisors, is a general principle that covers the intention, so that at the end of the day, the voters are able to give expression to their views. This is what brings us about, you see. So the challenge is we need to be able to capture that, so that how it is framed can accommodate a village in the most remote area of South Africa, where there's a school, if there's no school, there's a tent, if there's no tent, if people have decided that unfortunately they are going to meet under a tree and there's nothing else that we've been able to provide, then there should be some guidance as to how we enable the voters to be able to express their views. So that's the challenge that we have, you see. I would also not like to encourage the issue that you all come from different political parties, granted. But when we are deliberating here, the views that are canvassed is not the views of a particular political party. We can't speak without coming from a political party, but that should not be foregrounded, as if a view that's put on the table, because this is an ANC view, because this is a COPE view, because this is a DA view, I will need to differ with it. That's not where we are here. In committee level, we take all views on board, and then our responsibility is to analyze those views, and without fear or favor, at the end of the day, accept and take on board the best views that will enable our people to express their political desires. So that if a view is not accepted, it's not as if COPE's view has not been taken on board, or ANC view or DA view. We discuss those views here. This is what I'll ask of you members.
Sorry, Chairperson, but the law advisor has drafted something that may accommodate all
How
of
many
us.
Law advisors do you have here? at times you speak in the plural, at times you speak in the singular. And what happened to the parliamentary one is, oh, so you are still there. So would also, if you have any view to express, kindly do so. The last time I was in this chair, we had many apologies that you have to service about 50 committees. But today I'm happy to see you. You are like the comet early, once in 8 years. It's visible. So welcome today. Mr. Hendrickson.
Thank you, Chair. I'm going to try and accommodate everybody. Sorry I can't see the honourable members on the other side, but I am on this side. What if the proposed amendment then reads to say that should read two agents per voting station? You delete the words "as may be indicated by the commission." So in other words, it says two agents per voting station, comma, and if voting at a voting station takes place in more than one room or separately enclosed area, with a maximum of two agents allowed in each area at any one time. So in other words, it makes clear that in a normal voting station, it's always two agents, no more. And if you have voting in more than one enclosed area, up to a maximum then of two in each of those enclosed areas.
So if I understood you correctly, that covers all areas, whether you are in the village, on top of Comrade Clockwork's Mountain, or at the bottom of Table Mountain, you are covered. So can we have that and agree that that formulation more or less covers us?
Chair, sorry, can I then also add, similarly then with the second subsection dealing with the independent candidate, it will then similarly read that one agent per voting station in the ward, and if voting takes place at more than one place within the station, a maximum of one agent. That applies then to the independent, the second portion.
There's a general nodding of affirmation, so it seems that the House in its wisdom has been able to deal with the matter. So with those amendments in mind, that takes us to going through the bill clause by clause. Is my understanding correct? After you, you may.
Sorry, Chair, thank you, if you may indulge me. We just also request the committee, we just want to change the sequence of a clause, the current clause 4, which is known as section 17 capital A. We'd like to make that section 14 capital A. The reason being central payments relates to PR elections, which is dealt with in terms of section 14 and not 17, which is ward elections. And by leaving it as 17A, you may confuse the reader that so in effect, all we're asking for is that insert the following clause: central payments, clause 14A, similar and then as the current clause 4 is, we simply have that one rejected. So that
members, are we all walking next to Mr. Hendricks? He has not left us behind. If that's the case, and I would also assume that at a future day, very soon, we'll also have the cleaned bill to go through, so that we are sure that everything that we have spoken about here, agreed upon, is correctly captured. So today would be to go through this working bill, as it were. Shall we do that? You had your hand up, sir.
Thank you, Chair. We wanted to bring the this to the attention of the committee, but Mr. Hendricks just did that. And the state advisors will be cleaning up the bill to reflect the changes agreed upon. Thank you.
I'm worried you are saying the state law advisors and you are pointing to one man. Unless they are clones. Yes, clones. But you have been given the responsibilities. Shall we go clause by clause now? The first clause. Are we happy with it? Agreed. We need a mover and a seconder. If memory serves me correctly, there's a mover, a seconder. Are you noting the names, Eddie? Could we kindly go to clause number 2? A mover and a shaker, a seconder. We do have clause number 3, good folks. A mover. There, you would like to say something before.
Chair, with your permission, it will be clause 3 as swapped.
Clause 3 as swapped. As amended. Clause 3, a mover and a seconder. Thank you. Shall we go to clause 4? Clause 3 becomes clause 4. So we are done. So we go to...
May I?
You may.
I wanted to suggest our old way of doing things in this committee. That we, you read all of them, then someone moves and then second.
Right now, whilst I agree with you, it was important to do what we did in view of 3 and 4 having been swapped and amended. But for the ones that follow that clause 7 up to, is it 10 or 12? Ten. Could from 5 to 12.
When you come to clause 4,
Because of staff, it should now read as rejected. Clause 4 rejected. Because it's gone that way, the amendment on that other side. Now here it must read as rejected.
Okay, we'll do that. Clause 4 rejected. So now we go from 5 to 12. Ms. Lovemore?
Chair, I'm more than happy to, what word did you use? Propose that we...
Propose.
As long as we're not accepting the amendment of Section 39 in its current form, we know that we're accepting, that cleaned up bill is going to come back.
Yeah.
Okay.
With amendments. Can we have a seconder? Thank you, Mayor Palindlela. We are done. We'll read the report when we have the clean copy in front of us. Then your Thursday meeting should be very brief, Eddie. Why do you say you hope so? As if you are having a struggle of hopes and wishes. If this is all we are going to do.
Do we have a meeting on Thursday?
Eddie is proposing to have a brief meeting on Thursday to adopt B, triple R. Eddie, just...
For the BRRR, we are going to have somebody from committee section, just SMS down to take us through, and also our researcher will go through what we have done as on the report. We are required to have adopted the report by Friday. So my suggestion was that what if we meet on Thursday to look at the captured amendments and also look at the BRRR to adopt it. So that no, we are done with it before the medium-term policy statement next week.
Members, just to remind you, you are aware of item number 2 on today's agenda: presentation on the budgetary review and recommendation report process. So, I'm not sure how long this is going to take, how complicated that will be. If we can dispense of the requisite business today, then there won't be a need to have a meeting on Thursday for the bill, to accept the bill. Yeah. How about tomorrow? But it depends on the printing again of the bill. Today is Tuesday, tomorrow is Wednesday. How soon will we be able to get the clean copy? Nobody knows. Honourable members, in view of everything in front of us, may I plead for your indulgence and say that I know on Thursday is caucuses of the various political parties, but if we can at least meet for 30 minutes from 2 o'clock to 2:30 to do what we need to do, then we should be done. Because earlier than that, I don't see where we'd get the time and opportunity, because the clean copy of the bill would have to be printed. There's no way we'll have that by tomorrow morning or tomorrow afternoon. Am I correct? So unfortunately, we don't have So we are done with going through the bill now. On Thursday, we'll just be to read and sign off on the bill. Eddie, point number two. Presentation. Where's the presenter? You may be excused. This gentleman is still trying to catch his breath. I'm not sure from where he was running. But in the absence of warm tea and coffee, you can be fashionable and say there's iced coffee outside. Mr. Mthethwa Mkhize Kabazela, you are welcome. As soon as you have got your breath back, we are all ears to hear what you have to say. Masiyeba.
On the presentation, it's not human affairs, it's home affairs.
Masizole, thank you very much. Now it's Hume. I know that the Department of Home Affairs, it's called many names. And the department has got many sins that all of us are trying to seek to help to address. But we have not yet been reduced to human settlements or some other. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Honorable Members, Chairperson, my colleagues. I've been running, but I'm okay now. Yes, indeed, it is a home affairs. Honorable Members, according to Section 77(3) of the Constitution, Parliament is expected to provide for a procedure to process or consider money bills. In 2009, Parliament has passed the Act, which is called the Money Bills Amendment Procedure and Related Matters Act. This Act is a procedure for processing money bills, and that is why I'm here today. I will start from the assumption that a background to this Act was communicated to honorable members. My task today is to unpack Section 5 of this Act. Section 5 of the Money Bills Amendment Procedure and Related Matters Act provides that the National Assembly, through its committees, must annually assess the performance of each national department. In doing so, committees must annually submit the Budgetary Review and Recommendation Report for tabling in the National Assembly. Also, this Budgetary Review and Recommendation Report must be submitted to the Minister of Finance as well as the Minister of Home Affairs with respect to this committee. Section 5 of the Act continues to tell us what is it that needs to be contained in the Budgetary Review and Recommendation Report. For example, I've got my Act in front of me. Section 5 of the Act, in summary, reads as follows. The committee needs to assess the performance of the department with respect to its strategic plans, with respect to the annual reports and financial statements, as well as the efficiency, the effectiveness, and the economic use of both monetary and non-monetary resources. Seeing that an act is an act and the act does not provide us with a clear guideline on how honorable members will compile budgetary review and recommendation report, the committee section took an initiative of coming up with the so-called BRRR template. And this BRRR template was given to the House Chairperson committees in the NA for their decision. And we received feedback that the House Chairperson NA endorses the BRRR template that the committee section prepared on behalf of committees. Therefore, we proposed in our recommendation to the House Chair that the cover page may include the name of the committee, for example, Portfolio Committee on Home Affairs. The name of the report, in this case, is Budgetary Review and Recommendation Report. The calendar year, which is important because according to the Act, these reports must be drafted annually, as well as the name of the chairperson as the political leader of the committee. Honorable members, please allow me to go through the content page of the template that we came up with, introduction for any report, and obviously the conclusion. Between those two, we provided that there may be strategic priorities and objectives, an analysis of strategic and operational plans, an analysis of an annual report, including financial statements, as well as the consideration of the scope reports. bullet number 3 up to bullet number 5, honorable members, if this is what is specifically asked for by the Act in Section 5. And then we propose that honorable members make use of other information or other source documents, because we felt that these documents, they will assist members in evaluating performance and also to determine whether service delivery is at a satisfactory level or not. Honorable members, Chairperson, please allow me to go through these items one by one. Starting with the introduction, we propose that in the introduction, the committee may start by extending the mandate of the committee, and equally important, the methodology that the committee used in compiling the BRRR report. As we all know that in any critical analysis, the methodology is very important, as well as the primary data and secondary data that was taken into account in order to arrive at an opinion or a view or a decision by the committee. Then the committee may want to include the mandate of the department, including its vision and mission statement, in order to ensure that whatever assessment is done with the hope of determining how far the committee has worked towards its vision and the mission. As it is said out there in the business world that any entity should move towards its vision and mission statement according to the strategic management science. This is also important because in March of every year during the budget vote, the department or the minister relevant for the vote will table the strategic plans of a department, whereby honorable members are expected to comment on those strategic reports and come up with a report for a budget vote in March. Obviously, strategic objectives and priorities are things that the department has indicated to the committee that they plan to do. Then it will be fair enough at the end of the day or period under review for a committee to say, this is what you intended to do, how far have you gone in achieving your strategic priorities and objectives? Because during the budget vote period, that is where the department is informing members on how they plan to carry their business for the year. Honorable members, may I remind all of us that performance assessment, according to academic literature, is separated into two categories. One main one is performance measurement and performance evaluation. We felt as a committee section that the distinction between the two is very important in order to stay focused in what we'll be doing as Parliament. Performance measurement is where we assess the performance of the department in order to determine the level at which they are at in terms of service delivery. And performance evaluation now, that is where we move beyond performance measurement, where we engage in benchmarking. In other words, we are trying to determine whether the department did achieve its targets as they were recorded in the strategic as well as the business plan of the department. Obviously, honorable members, strategic priorities and measurable objectives are of critical importance in order to determine whether the performance of the department is at a satisfactory level or not. For example, if I may make use of an example close to my heart, human settlement, the department may say we want to build 40 houses. Now, the committee may want to determine whether it is a 44-roomed houses, 42-room houses, or 41-roomed houses in order to measure the level of attainment of an objective, because to say there are 40 houses is not sufficient. Over and above that, perhaps that more is needed, because there may be those 44-roomed houses, however, the quality is another issue that needs to be discussed. That is when now honorable members need to engage in other strategies in order to ensure that quality of those houses is at a satisfactory standard. Without relying on the communication from the department, because when you are about to form an opinion about someone else's performance, you need to engage in the so-called independent assessment in order to get the true picture. In Parliament, we do oversight. And today I want to refer to fact-finding as opposed to oversight, because fact-finding carries more weight, according to my own opinion. In short, honorable members, strategic priorities and measurable objectives will be used as a threshold level in order to determine whether the department performed to and met their targets or not. Honorable members, obviously, during the course of the year, honorable members, they would like to evaluate the strategic and operational plans against the outcomes of the department. That is where now the department, the committee will be engaging with the department. And this type of relationship, it should not be a once-off event, but it should be a periodic event, because it is not sufficient to wait until annual reports are published, then the committee can say, now we are engaging with the department on a strategic plan, which means oversight activities are going to become even more important in Parliament. As I indicated, that the committee has invited the department to brief them on key or burning issues affecting the department, it should not be sufficient. But the committee may invite inputs or evidence from other stakeholders as well in order to get an independent view on the progress of the department. Honourable members, please allow me to go through with you Section 32 reports. According to the Act, a committee is also required to look not only at qualitative performance of the department, but as well as the quantitative performance of the department. Section 32 of the Public Finance Management Act provides for the publishing of reports on the state of a vote's budget. And these publications are done on monthly basis as well as quarterly basis as per PFMA. This information is sent to National Treasury, and National Treasury publishes it together with other information for other votes. So this information is publicly available for public consumption. I must say that the website is not in the form of a database format, but is in the form of a table that is posted on the internet. Therefore, it is very important that the timing of publishing of this report is recorded by officials in order to ensure that this information is downloaded for members when it is available. When the committee will be looking at Section 32 report, they are really interested in studying expenditure patterns, which is the underspending as well as the overspending. And I want to caution that here, underspending may not mean poor performance, or overspending may not be mean overperformance. That is when the committee is expected to link the budget into service delivery. To say, for example, there was underspending in budget A, what are implications on the service delivery? For example, if the project was delayed and that led to underspending, what does that mean to the poorest of the poor? Because at the end of the day, they will never understand that there were technical challenges. That is why the project could not continue, which means the department need to account to Parliament to prove it beyond reasonable doubt that they exercise their due diligence in order to ensure that the project is taking place for the poorest of the poor. So when there are materialistic variances between what the department intended to do and what actually happened for the department to come in account, in addition to other strategies that the committee may decide to use. It is very important, again, to link the spending pattern to the operational plans of a department, because the department supposed to come with a sound plan of action whereby they say by certain time we plan to do this. And if that does not happen, surely the department should have acceptable reasons on why that did not take place. Honourable members, still on Section 32 report, the National Treasury does an analysis called Spending Trend Analysis, and this analysis is for committee purposes only, is not for public consumption, therefore it cannot be distributed. However, I did realise that Mr. Matonzi did get a copy of this Spending Trend Analysis. It is available for committee This analysis is interesting because it details all the spending trend analysis of all budget votes, including presidency and the parliament itself. And then it reports on the spending patterns per program and per sub-program over a number of variables. I'm confident that Mr. Matonzi will be happy to share an example of that, of this analysis I'm talking about with honourable members. Honourable members, there is a committee called Standing Committee on Appropriations, whose one of the key functions is to look at the spending patterns of all departments. Standing Committee on Appropriations look at this Section 32 report on a quarterly basis, and then they will identify departments that are underspending or overspending, and then they will invite them to account to them. And then they will compile a report after they engage in a thorough process with the department concerned. And this report is available in Parliament because it is a report for consideration, which means it goes to the House. And this report may be useful to the committee if the Standing Committee on Appropriations did identify, for example, the Department of Home Affairs as one of the departments that was underspending in a particular quarter. However, due to workload, the Standing Committee might not have got an opportunity to go through all departments. And again, this is the function that I think the officials who are supporting the committee need to continuously monitor what finance committees are doing in order to determine if finance committees are doing anything that will be of relevance to the committee. Honourable members, please allow me to go through what we think could be said about annual report and financial statements. Section 5 of the Act specifically requires committees to go to report on annual report as well as financial statements. Annual reports in the past are usually tabled at the end of September of each calendar year. And in Parliament in October, a committee is expected to compile budgetary review recommendation report. In 2010, a period between 11th of October to the 22nd of October was dedicated to committees to compile and finalize budgetary review and recommendation report. Now, obviously we have a challenge here that if reports are tabled at the end of September, it means researchers and content advisors, they've got only one day to go through the annual report, because during the second and the third week of October, this information must be ready for members to consider that information. And that is a challenge, that obviously time is not sufficient for a committee to go through a thorough process, or put simply, to do justice to the annual report. In the past, honourable members, committees used to report on annual report, but they had time to do so until Parliament rises for December holidays. Now the challenge is that BRRR must be finalised before the medium term budget policy statement, because finance committees, when they are scrutinising that policy statement, need to understand more about departments. Since finance and appropriation committees don't work directly with the departments, they will solely or mainly rely on the budgetary review and recommendation report in order to take an informed decision of which the Minister of Finance must respond to. For example, if the committee decides to say, we think that the budget for the Department of Rural Development need to be increased because of the land claims, because we all know that there are challenges there. They need to know more about background information, and the budgetary review is one source document that they will find useful. And that is why a decision was taken by presiding officers that budgetary review needs to be ready before the medium-term budget policy statement. A recommendation, therefore, honourable members, was made to the House Chairperson that in the past committees used to report on annual report. Now the Act requires committees to report on annual report, but to include it in BRRR. Now the question was, should we send these two more or less same reports to the House? And a recommendation was made that the BRRR report should subsume a report on annual reports and financial statement, so that a one complete, comprehensive report could be sent to the House for further processing. Honourable members, I did touch on it indirectly that the success on the analysis of annual report and financial statement is highly dependent on timely submission of these source documents. And timely submission at the moment means at the end of September, because departments are allowed to do so. But the critical question that I hope members will raise today is that, do we have sufficient time to go through the annual report if the 22nd of October is the final due date for the budgetary review and recommendation report? Well, an advice is made here, is proposed here, that ministries should be encouraged to submit these documents as early as possible, perhaps in August instead of the end of October of each calendar year. And another question was raised, that where did we get this information from? Did we consult the ministries? And the answer to it was no, we did not consult ministries, but obviously we're trying to ensure that the work of Parliament is done efficiently. Perhaps by not consulting the ministries, we're unfair to them as well. We're biased towards Parliament, I guess, because we're paid by Parliament. Anyway, on a serious note, honourable members, there are departments that submitted their reports early, far earlier than September. Then we thought if a large number of departments can do so, perhaps all of them can do so. But obviously, this is a unilateral view, because I'm confident that the department will say to the contrary. Honourable members, the Act also requires us, as I indicated before, to consider reports by the Committee on Public Accounts. The methodology that is used by this committee is that they look at the Auditor General report on the annual report of a department. After they've studied and analysed it on their own, then they invite the Auditor General or the auditor who was auditing the company, and then they will ask them to brief the committee further. Once that has been done, and then this, the Committee on Public Accounts will invite the department to come and account. The moment the department comes to accounts to Parliament, by that time, honourable members are well informed about the findings of the Auditor General. And that is the methodology perhaps I will recommend to this committee as well, that they invite the Auditor General to brief them on the audit outcome on the Department of Home Affairs, so that when the department come, at least members, they've got a better picture of the performance of the department in terms of financial compliance. As we all know, the Auditor General focuses on quantitative issues that are affecting the department, which is finance and finance-related matters. In summary, the financial compliance. The types of expenditure that they usually report on are fruitless and wasteful expenditure. That is whereby an expenditure took place and there was no need for such an expenditure because it did not carry any economic benefit. These types of unwanted expenditure are very should be looked after and against from an Auditor General's report, because Section 5 of this Act says the committee must determine whether the department was efficient, effective, and economic in the use of resources. And if there is a fruitless and wasteful expenditure, really, it should be a serious cause for concern, and the department should come and brief the committee on why there was a fruitless and wasteful expenditure. Irregular expenditure, that is where an entity incurred an expenditure without following policies, for example, supply chain management policies, which means it designed a policy, it agreed on the policy, but the very same policy was not followed. And you find out that senior officials, they condoned condonation of error. However, it remains an unwanted and irregular expenditure which is prohibited in terms of the Public Finance Management Act. Overspending is one expenditure that is not wanted, as well as unauthorized expenditures. The Auditor General report is very clear on this amount of expenditure. And from my experience, as I've been working with finance committees, well, this could amount to millions of rands, and in total could amount to billions of rands. The committee may invite additional comments from the SCOPA, because they've already worked with the committee if they have reported on these types of expenditure by the committee. Once again, honourable members, as was the case in my slide number 12, the challenge is if annual reports are only tabled at the end of September, obviously we are talking about more than 40 annual reports excluding entities. It is obvious that the Committee on Public Accounts did not get time to go through all these reports for the previous financial year. Unfortunately, I work with SCOPA. At the moment, they've just finished reporting on the annual report for the 2008-09 financial year. Again, we have a challenge here that annual reports, they come to Parliament at a time that is not convenient for Parliament for it to do justice in terms of oversight and scrutinizing this annual report. SCOPA does not deal with departments only, it also deals with the annual reports of entities. For example, government printing works. Therefore, an advice was made to SCOPA that perhaps they should prioritize the annual reports of the department, because in terms of the Act, a committee is expected to report on national departments. It is silent on entities. However, sometimes entities, they form part of a department. For example, the Department of Public Enterprise. Again, there we need political guidance in order to assist members even further. Honourable members, as I indicated, there are other sources of documents or types of information that a committee may want to revisit in order to determine if the department performed at a satisfactory level. Let me start by the communique from the House Chairperson entitled Focus Area for the Fourth Parliament in Parliament 2010. the House Chairperson indicated that during the BRRR process, committees may want to determine how far the department has gone in developing or moving towards Millennium Development Goals. Again, this is a clear indication that the work of a department should not be viewed as the work that is done in silos. At the end of the day, all departments, they need to realize that we are one government and work towards the same vision. That is why the State of the Nation Address is one of the documents that are respected in other countries, because there are different types of legislation. A formal legislation like the one that comes in Parliament, and a legislation which is called delegated legislation. And a proclamation by the president is a policy, and departments need to take that into account as well. For example, key issues, for example, education, health, are one of the key issues that are always included in the State of the Nation Address. And the State of the Nation Address is not about dressing smartly and coming to Parliament. It's really to analyze what the president is saying, and then decide on how are you going to ensure that you address these serious issues that the commander-in-chief has identified, the president. Honorable members, in South Africa, we have introduced the Ministry in the Presidency for National Planning Commission, as well as Performance Monitoring and Evaluation. Starting with performance monitoring and evaluation, there are 12 outcomes that are expected from all departments combined. Again, that is one source document that is very important. What is it from those 12 national outcomes that is affecting the department? Most importantly, what is it that the department has done in order to ensure that as a country we achieve all 12 outcomes as stated from the document from the Ministry and the Presidency, Performance Monitoring and Evaluation. National Planning Commission, one of the documents that they are working on at the moment is Vision 2025. South Africa as a country realized that we are good in policies, but our implementation is challenged with integration. And that is why we've got National Planning Commission to ensure that we work towards a common vision, or we have the so-called a shared vision in order to ensure that we're moving towards the same direction. Again, reports by National Planning Commission, I think they will be useful to this committee, because when we are evaluating the performance of the department, we are not only interested in the current situation or the medium-term situation, but we are also interested in the long-term long-term view of where the department is going to. Today I was reading a paper of Integrated Resource Plan, which talks about energy supply in South Africa. The Ministry on Energy is currently working on approximately 10 billion rand or more, and that is why next week there will be a conference in Northern Cape, because they are planning now for ensuring that our energy is less reliant on coal for our energy. So these are the things that a committee should look for from a department, not only to say this year we've done X, Y, and Z, but what direction really is the department taking. Honorable members, bullet number three, I'm talking about the reports of the Auditor General. I did speak about them in the past. They are one document, documents that are not specifically referred to in the Act, but they are of critical importance. Honorable members, in May, 21st of May this year, we received recommendations from the Financial and Fiscal Commission, whereby it was looking at the Appropriation Bill as well as the Division of Revenue Bill, and they were making recommendations. Their recommendation, personally, I like them, because once again, they are linking a budget to service delivery. What is it that will assist departments provinces as well as municipalities to achieve their strategies. So they make very useful recommendations. For example, this year they made a recommendation on rental housing, which will affect human settlement. They may make a recommendation that will be useful to this committee, PC on Home Affairs. Honourable members, I said today the weight of a site, personally I feel at the back of our minds we should think of effect-finding activity, because the committee need to make a statement of whether they are satisfied with the performance of the department. Again, when you want to make such a statement, you really need to engage in a scientific process to ensure whether the department did perform to the satisfactory level or not. So fact-finding site visits are one of the tools that I will recommend to the committee. Honourable members, I'm aware that this will be our first BRRR, but in future years, the usefulness of the previous BRRR will be, this is what the committee recommended in the previous BRRR, and say to the department, how far have you gone in implementing those recommendations? What are your strengths? What are your weaknesses? How can we assist the department? How do you think you should move forward from now on? So honourable members, BRRR are there as one of the powerful document that should not be used as a policing tool, but should be used as a tool whereby committees can reflect back to it and the department to say, how can we improve, because this is what Parliament suggested we should improve on. Honourable members, reports on budget vote, as I indicated, are very important. In March of every year, it's a very interesting period, because all departments, they are asking for more money. And during the BRRR period now, that is when you say to a department, yes, you received this amount of money, how did you use the money? Can you link that money to service delivery? Once everything, oversight, analysis by researchers, content advisors, engagement with the department has been done, Auditor General, other committees within Parliament, and then a committee needs to have a committee meeting where members, they will sit on their own and say, here is information, we've got all information, then what are our observations as the committee?
Excuse me, Chair. I noticed that the chair now is servicing the cheapest watch in the room instead of servicing the delivery we're talking about. Thank you very much.
I thank you, Honourable Member. I'm making sure that the cheapest watch in the room doesn't stop, you see. My other concern is... it's the first time that we get the report, and Mr. Mkhize is very enthusiastic. So there's lots of details here and there that he gives, which members of Parliament know, have been working with these things, you see. So I didn't want to stop him or dampen his enthusiasm. But I am, however, concerned about time. So that he's about to conclude, and he did say that he has a passion for human settlements. But what I would advise, or perhaps I should do that when you are done with your presentation, Mr. Mkhize. But let's be mindful of time, Chief.
Thank you.
And I just want to caution that you are speaking to members of Parliament. Some have been here for 5 years, some have been here for 10 years, others 15 years. So you are not pouring information into empty vessel.
Thank you, Chairperson. Well, under the committee observations section, we recommended that the committee may want to summarize key findings in a coherent and logical format, and then key findings to be based on the analysis that is made above. This section is also very important because after committee observations, and then the committee will come up with the conclusion. And the conclusion will be really on the statement on whether the department has performed to a satisfactory level or not. And again, I need to emphasize that the observations really need to be based on the achievement of strategic priorities and objectives of the department, and as reflected in the Act, the efficient, effective, and the economical use of both monetary and non-monetary resources. And then the committee, according to Section 5 of the Act, it says that the committee may include recommendations, and then we would like to advise that if recommendations are included, they should be conform to the Constitution, to the principle of separation of powers, to the principle of cooperative governance, the principles that I'm confident that members are familiar with. In terms of the content of recommendations, we advise that recommendations should be clear in terms of who they are directed to, what action is expected, and recommendations should be practical. They should be reasonable, achievable, or achievable action is expected. And we always advise that if they've got time frames, it's good, because therefore Parliament will be able to track on how far how far they've implemented the recommendation. At least time frames, they provide guidelines to the department as well in terms of when Parliament feels they should implement the recommendation. Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, Honourable Members.
Mr. Mkize, we thank you. And I suppose I should also say we thank the Office of the Chair of Chairs. The template provided members in the interest of time is to assist the portfolio committees as to how to report on their work and engage departments. You have been doing this for years, you see. My advice, Mr. Mkize, is that when you go to your various committees, not only human settlements, the presentation obviously has to be pitched such that you are able to provide the general information that's applicable to all portfolio committees. But it would also assist to know a little more, or just give yourself the time to do a background search in regard to the department or the portfolio committee that you are going to speak to in regard to its core function, so that the enthusiasm about human settlements is correct, but carry the same to the others that you are going to see. And as I say, the general principles are fine, but we should also pitch. It might be a bit difficult, I would appreciate your content and information. It should speak to the knowledge that your audience has, unless you have decided they've got absolutely no knowledge. That also determines how you pitch your presentation. But having said that, I would like to thank you, and members, very briefly, if there's any questions you'd like to pose, comments that you'd like to make, this is your opportunity. Ntate Tlokwe.
Chairperson. Maybe we should I mean, for the past 15 years in a democratic parliament. Maybe we should, because you see, I don't see any difference for the past 15 years, the way we write reports, you know. I thought up to so far, after we have amassed this kind of experience in dealing with issues in the manner that we deal with, we would want to write the reports in such a way that we state facts rather than put a lot of English words together and try to make sense. But we speak to facts, real facts, concretized facts. Because, I mean, we cannot continue to theorize for the past 15 years, right, in the same style, same way, we need to send some sense of maturity now. We need facts, really. I mean, we don't need this kind of details. We need facts. So that facts should be able to reflect where we are, what are we doing, where are we going, where do we come from for the past 15 years. Because really, this is just, for me, it's just English.
In that talk, thank you, honorable member. Shall I say that Mr. Mkhize, we thank you, Chief, and we'll also interact with the House Chair. He's also very enthusiastic, so we will engage him in regard to these matters, and we'll utilize the template as far as possible, and we'll also add and engage the process on the basis of the experience that members have, and go forward with it. Dudu, I'm sure you are seeing an article on Home Affairs there, but it's not the time to read it now. It's a very interesting article on Home Affairs, but it's the wrong time and place. So what we are saying, comrades, is, honorable members, is that we'll engage with this process and do our best to enrich it on the basis of the experience that we do have add to it. So the exercise is appreciated, and through the office of the committee secretary and yourself, Mr. Mkhize, we'll call upon you when we so need your good office and services. I would like to thank you for the time that you have availed to us this afternoon, sir. Thank you. I would like to remind the committee, we also have a committee researcher, Mr. Adam. So if you'd like to say a few words, and thereafter I'll just make comments that are pertinent to us as a committee.
Good afternoon, members. You've seen the big English document that I've given you. I understand the members' frustration with the extent of the information available. I think bearing in mind that this is the first time that all these various aspects of information have been drawn together. They were constantly monitoring, but we've never really been brought together like they have in the BRR reports. This is a draft report that I've given you, and as he said, the time has been very limited, and this is the first time we're doing these. So bear with me if it's some of it is quite rough, but it's a compilation of analysis and reports that we've been doing throughout the year, along the lines of what Mr. Mkhize has suggested. So if you look at the document, it's got all the things that were recommended. Well, not all, most of them. So if you'll look at the introduction, I'm not going to go into detail. The idea is that the information is going to be provided to you, and then based on the information that is available, the members can then come up with recommendations. I didn't want to give recommendations beforehand. I have a set of recommendations, but they need to come from the members first, and then I can add some if necessary. So it starts with the strategic objectives of the committee, including the new ones for the BRR. And then it goes through the programs and the objectives of the department. I've underlined a couple of things that could have budgetary implications, because we're basically using these reports to make recommendations where there might be more or less money needed. Sorry, I haven't got page numbers on here, but from point 2.2, the actual measurable objectives of the department have been extracted and put in the document from the strategic plan for this year. Then there's an analysis of the last quarter of 2009-10, annual financial fourth quarter section 32 financial reports, as well as the first quarter of this year. These are the most recent available financial data, and then I've done an analysis of increase or over and under expenditure. That's for the section 32 reports. Then I've also in section 5 there's an analysis of the annual reports, which we've already given to members, that annual report analysis, which is basically an analysis of the Auditor General's report. But then I've also included the issues that members raised in that annual report analysis. I've adapted them slightly so that they emphasize where more money is going to be needed. There were many statements made, but I focused on the ones and tailored them such that they reflect where more or less money may be needed. Then the SCOPA report for this committee is not available yet. They've briefed the SCOPA, but there were some errors in the report, and we're still waiting for it. So it's not reflected here, but if we haven't got it by tomorrow, then I'll include the previous year's SCOPA reports, because that's all we have available. Then I've given the analysis of the State of the Nation address as it applied to this committee in the next section, because this is the additional information section. And so we have the analysis of the State of the Nation address in here. Then after that, from the committee section, we have a summary of committee observations from the oversight trips that we were on, as well as the recommendations that arose out of those reports. And then there's the budget vote report, which is again analysis done by the research unit on the budget table this year for the coming year. And that goes into the programs where more money is proposed to be spent, and then that must be related again to the strategic objectives mentioned before. Are they related? That also, given that the emphasis and the time is short, the focus is primarily on the department as a whole. But this budget analysis section also includes analysis of the entities. GPW, FEB, and IEC. And there's also an implications section that was done in this analysis that could feed into our recommendations when the report is tabled. But I didn't want. Yeah, I'm not sure what my responsibility is, because, like I said, it's a new process, so I didn't want to make the recommendations myself. It needs to come from the committee, but it can be finalized if we meet again. Then, as indicated by Mr. Nkize, the House Chair also indicated that Millennium Development Goals need to be included. I haven't gotten around to this yet. We've only just received the mandate yesterday, so I'm busy analyzing the direct implications for the Department of Home Affairs, as well as its collaboration with other departments, which will then include on Thursday if we discuss this. Then, yeah, so that's basically just a summary of the information that's included in this report. So various sources of information that members can use in terms of making conclusions and recommendations, if they have any at all. The additional information that was mentioned, or the additional sources of information we could have used that isn't included in here, I felt that, I mean, the Public Service Commission, the Ministry, the National Planning Commission, and all that information, it's already a lot of information. So I thought we'd use what we have, and then now that we're doing proactively, we can include these things in further years. But a lot of these recommendations are very similar to what is mentioned in the State of the Nation address, in the budget recommendations, etc. So feel free to look at those additional sources of information if you require. But I feel we have sufficient information, and we've covered all the information that is required by the Act. And given that this is our first run, I think we shouldn't swamp ourselves with too much information. So, but basically this is the information that's available, and then Eddie's trying to push for a discussion of what recommendations we'd like to make on Thursday after we finalise the IEC, the Municipal Electoral Bill. So I have a set of recommendations that I've extracted, and then if the members could come with, once they've, I know the time is very limited, but again, it's the timing of this is quite rushed. So if they have any particular recommendations that they'd like to come with, then those can come with on Thursday, and we need to table a report.
Adam, thank you for speaking to the report that you have started to prepare. Members, the unfortunate situation that we find ourselves in is that there's this new method of reporting that's proposed. You have the input right now, and we are interacting with this process. But the other material disadvantage that we have is that committees are expected to submit, to table their reports by Friday. So there's hardly time, you see. So if truth be told, this becomes more of an academic exercise form other than actually going to the content. This is what Honorable Tlokwe is speaking about when he says that the content. So as we move forward, also what Honorable Lovemore said earlier, that there are issues pertaining to the Electoral Act. There are issues pertaining to Film and Publications Board. There are issues pertaining to the government printer. It would not be possible to do justice to all those issues once off. So the nature of the issues, our interaction with all those issues, are such that it's on an ongoing basis. For now, I would plead that we structure something in order to, as best as possible, meet the Friday deadline, whatever we have to submit. You have a draft, and reach the draft, we meet this deadline. But earlier on in one of our meetings, I also spoke about the need, suggested it to the portfolio committee, that we need one meeting, just as members of parliament attached to home affairs, where we can sit and brainstorm and say, what are the pertinent, urgent issues that we as members of parliament identify for the Department of Home Affairs? This is our core function, our oversight, what are the experiences? What do we see on the ground when we service our constituency offices, when we interact with the general public, when they speak about home affairs? There's progress, but there are still gripes. What are those gripes? What are those problems? Where is progress? Where is the progress? How can we emulate the good examples that are set so that we take charge of our responsibility as members of this portfolio committee? The other option that we have in civil society, in universities, you may also identify people or agencies that you'd like to come and make presentations to Home Affairs in order to take the work that we do, take it forward critically. We get reports from the department, we get reports from committee section and what have you, but that's not the end. We can also source information for ourselves in order to enrich how we carry out our responsibility. I just wanted to flag that issue and say that moving forward, these are all the other dynamics and aspects that we need to integrate into our work. Comments, good folks? I'm going to be a gentleman in the old sense of the word. Two hands went up at the same time. Ms. Lovemore and Masizole. I'm not sure your hands went up at the same time, so I'm going to start with Ms. Lovemore.
Thank you very much, Chair, and I must congratulate Adam, because if he found out about this yesterday, then he's done a substantial amount of work, and it really is, well, it really is very impressive. I just want to add one report that I've come across that is a source of information, and that's the Public Protector's annual report, because I'm afraid that Home Affairs features very poorly in the Public Protector's report, and it's a good source of information. And Chair, I certainly hear what you say as far as the time constraints and you know, the level of detail that we can go into and the amount of work that we can put into. Ideally, we would like to workshop this and really put in our own views, etc., and do the best we can. But I understand the time constraints. My question is, though, what is going to happen to this information? I mean, if we don't do justice, which it appears that we actually can't within the time constraint, what are the implications? If this then goes to the Minister of Finance and we haven't identified perhaps all the problems that there are, or financial implications of problems, or whatever it might be, what are the implications then with the next step in the process with the Minister of Finance? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Ms. Lovemore. Baba, Masizole.
Thank you, Chairperson. In your absence last week, I said to the interim chair, Honorable Maunye, that it has become a norm in this committee that I'm referred to as Masizole, which is my first name. But my surname is Mnasela, which nobody calls me in that, and I would like to insist that it be used. Chair, as my elder in my tradition, I respect you calling me that. I'm sure it will be corrected in future. May I simply suggest, because I remember when we started here, we said, no, it's going to be a briefing. But more than just being a briefing, it's something that really, you know, sought us to apply our intellectual maximum capacity. And having dealt with the matters that we dealt with today, and the fact that we only saw this document for the first time, in fact, I only saw this document for the first time here in this meeting. Now, if you want to do justice, no ways that you can do that. However, the importance of the document as it stands does apply or does require us to respond on time. So my suggestion, Chair, is that we go and familiarize ourselves with the contents and the requirements of this portfolio committee as individual members. When we meet on Thursday, then we submit whatever that one is has thought it's important that it be included in the recommendations. Unfortunately for Adam, I think he has done a very good work. Honorable Lavmo has said so. Then whatever that he has put together, if there are issues or components of the report that we think that should be included based on the oversights and the long reports that we've had last week in the annual report, and of course other documents that may inform our work as members, that will bring that into the meeting on Thursday. And I'm more than happy as well if there could be a provision, Chairperson, that you know, this thing of not being able to see you in this committee room, it's very dangerous. I don't know whether you're angry or still fine, you know. I like looking at the mood of the chair when I speak. The reality here is that probably one would be at ease to submit some of these even before the meeting to the researcher, so that we have a consolidated or a much amended report from the one that we have for that particular day, as per the recommendations from members. But I think this process was handled in a very bad manner, that you are asked to respond within 3 days because someone is sitting somewhere and they need a report on this matter. So whoever that said it's an academic process, yes, you are right. We are doing an assignment here and we need to pass, and it's wrong because it affects people, and they expect us to do that, to do our best as members of parliament.
Honourable Member, we thank you for your input, and we'll also make it a point to seek to make you happy and call you by your father's name. Whenever somebody refers to me as Mr. Martins, I look behind me and think my father is around, you see. But we are here to seek to make everybody happy. So members, you have heard this request. Any further inputs, good folks? We first want the questions. Adam. Ma'am Balindlela.
Chair, thank you very much. Really, I don't think it's so important that I ask this question, because Honorable Marcela has already indicated that maybe if we have a chance, we can also put in some inputs and give to Adam, and maybe that will also help us. I think it is a good effort that we are all trying to do something. And I was therefore going to say, please look also at the recommendations of the FFC, because they have, in one meeting that I sit, the treasury meeting, they do complain about the fact that they have been giving these recommendations and no one has actually been taking care of them. Thank you very much.
We thank you, Honourable Member. Mr. Adam. Oh, the Honourable Member.
Thank you, Chairperson. Mine is also just to add to say that we would like to thank Adam for the job that he has done on this matter. And I would like to support Honorable Marcela that maybe we should just bring whatever information that we may find for our Thursday meeting to add on to what Adam has drafted for us. That was, I just wanted to agree with him. And then state that, Chairperson, maybe when you, Chairperson, meet with the Chair of Chair, maybe you can actually state that the committee members are not very happy with the little time that has been given to the committees to do this big job. Thank you.
I thank you, Mayor Makuba. The committee secretary, not committee clerk, he reminds me always.
Mm-hmm.
The committee secretary says that he's getting concerned. Adam is getting all the praise for the hard work, and he also had a hand in it, and it's not acknowledged. So, Eddie, your intellectual property right is respected. I have asserted it on your behalf. respond.
In regards Ms. Lovemore's concerns, but also the members in general about the limited amount of time, this is the first time it's being done. So the planning hasn't been as good. It's a trial run. It's basically getting us into the practice. And they're not going to be as stringent this year because it's the first trial run. But it's getting us into the habit of keeping a track of all these things as we go along. In addition to the practice, it's also this whole process is actually just supposed to be an additional control. You already have the Auditor General and Treasury and internal audits and various mechanisms for controlling budget. The idea is that Parliament was never able to specifically amend budgetary, amend in terms of recommending monetary changes. And now we have this power, so we're practicing the ability to be able to actually say this amount, you know, we can actually change amounts, not just make recommendations. So whatever information we come up with will be considered, because as Mr. Mkhize mentioned, often when the committees on appropriations and on public accounts deal with information, they're dealing with purely numerical and quantitative data. So what we have as a committee in terms of experience of qualitative and actual experience is going to be useful to them, even if we've had limited amount of time to deal with it. Next year it's going to be easier because I'll be gathering the information as we go. We're going to be analyzing it as we go, and then will be a lot more considered, and we'll have more time to consider it next year. But that said, it's still going to be useful this year to kind of go through this information. It's also kind of a recap for us. We can see what the committee's been doing, and we can see how we can use what we've been doing to actually change the budget recommendations for both the MTBBS, the medium term budget statement, and then also the next year's budget. So it will have some impact. If members want to send them, if they don't already have my email address, I'll give them a card, and they can send me information. I'll make sure, even if I don't sleep tonight, tomorrow night or whatever, to include it in. And then whatever gets included on Thursday, whatever is suggested on Thursday, we need to adopt the report, but we can say adopt it as amended, and I'll include that information, make sure that it's finished and clear by Friday. Yeah.
Adam, I'm sure members appreciate that I heard Eddie saying that he also commits not to sleep, but he says he won't be sleeping with you. So you are covered there as well. Good folks, I thank you for your time. I think we have gone as far as we can today. Thank you very much. The good folks.
Get the credit.
That's why I told the chair.
Yeah, he said no, this is not fair because he's getting all the credit.
Yeah.
When they add bonuses, who's going to get bonuses?
I once told